Hey, everyone. Thank you for coming out. Welcome to Android Hacker Protection Level Zero. And as of 24 hours ago, some Black Phone stuff that we're going to demo and this guy had lots of fun with. So just a quick, who are we? This guy is Jay Case. I'm Diff. This is proof that we are not the same person. Many people have thought that for a couple of years, that we're the same exact person. So he's CTO, applied cybersecurity. He's basically an expert troll and finds lots of stuff and has the biggest mouth in Android, I think is what we're saying. That's his GitHub. That's his Twitter. I think he just capped out and beat Dan Rosenberg, so keep following him. I'm an obfuscation junkie. I work at Lookout Mobile Security. I do research and response, and I pretend to know as much as this guy, and that's also my GitHub. So why are we here? If you Google around and look for Android protection, and lots of people are Googling, like, how do I protect my game? I don't want to be hacked. I don't want malware injected into this. I don't understand what this kind of stuff is. All obfuscators are not created equal. And if you look at stuff, people are like, well, what's a hacker protection factor? And that's just a marketing term some guy made up, and his obfuscator had a hacker protection level of, I believe, 35. And that's awesome. So 35 levels of protection, that means nothing. So basically, we want to demystify it. Like, obfuscation is not necessarily that magical. You got to just be able to identify what's going on. Is it a known packer? Is it a known obfuscator or protector? And what are you going to be able to do for it? Also, another reason we want to look at this, so Lookout, we do anti-malware, and what you see a lot in the news is people saying the most sophisticated thing in the world just came out, and they used a commercial packer, and we didn't actually notice that that was a commercial packer, and they didn't actually really do anything that sophisticated, but they bought a product that did it for them, but they're really bad attackers, and they're not. But you just got to realize what you're dealing with, so we'll kind of want to take a look at that. On top of it, this is mainly for educational purposes because, you know, good people do use these, and we're not suggesting that you go out there and crack all the games that are doing this stuff. But bad developers do use these tools as well to inhibit people like us trying to analyze malware and see, like, are people using exploits? Are they stealing your contacts? What's going on? So it is very educational to be able to know how these type of systems work and how to pull them apart. So what's out there? About 2 years ago, I gave a talk. It was Dex Education 101. The slides are still online. There's a lot of proof of concepts out there. It had lots of anti-decompilation tricks, anti-analysis tricks, and I released a demo. We also just demoed one of the preliminary Dalvik unpackers. So that was pretty cool. And what we saw happen is a lot of people started integrating these into little one-off tools that would break Boxmolly, Dex2Jar, and IDA Pro. So what's really great is since we tried to find a lot of these things to break all the tools, we got a lot of patches submitted. A lot of these open source tools and a lot of the tools that you guys can find online, they're already patched and you can't actually break them as easily anymore. But what ended up happening is now that all these tools have caught up, people are starting to use packers a lot more and protectors. I'm going to explain what those are. But a lot of what this is going to do is it makes it so you can't actually do static analysis. You're actually going to have to do some runtime analysis or go through some hoops to unpack some code. But for the most part, the current tools are going to stand up against all the little tiny tricks that we've already demoed in the past. So what are our packers and protectors? So hopefully you guys know basically a little bit about obfuscators. Basically, an obfuscator is going to take what you write as a developer, it's going to get obfuscated, so it's going to look a little different and hopefully be harder for someone to reverse your compiled code back to what you started with. So this is just a little example of basically, this is an optimizer slash obfuscator. It's really good. Everyone, Google says you guys should be running this kind of stuff like ProGuard and look into more obfuscation. And essentially, the code on top is what you would be writing yourself. So that's basically a reflection statement doing a system exit. And on the bottom, that's actually what an obfuscator is going to try and turn that into. And you can see it doesn't really look that nice to look at. And we can see basically some function calls with really funky names and special characters for the actual. So you get the class name, looks like con, and then you get a special character for the actual function. And then it's passing all these other things. And that's basically calling an encryption method to decrypt, decryption method to decrypt what the actual string is supposed to be. So basically, you can't see Java lang system anymore because they've encrypted that and pulled it out. So if you're just running strings on the file, you're not going to see these type of calls, and you're actually going to have to go in and decrypt all this stuff manually. So protectors, this is what we've dubbed, it's similar to a packer, but essentially what you're going to have is you have your stub application, and that's what the protector is actually injecting, and then they break your code so that when someone is actually statically analyzing your application, it just looks like it's all broken, and you know all the tools are going to skip over and be like, well, this was bad, I'm just going to insert a NOP, this is an invalid call, I'm not really going to decompile that, and they just don't really understand what's going. So what happens is you run this on your phone, and the stub application is going to actually fix all the broken code in memory. So then when the actual application hits that code that we originally thought was broken and we didn't analyze, it's going to be able to run fine. So basically, it's protecting your application from static analysis, but it will actually, it supposedly works on the actual system. And then this is your normal packer. It's very similar to like the scheme of UPX or any of the other x86 packers. You have your stub application, and that is wrapping the hidden and sometimes encrypted code. So once it's executed, the stub application launches. It's going to unpack, decrypt, and put into memory the actual executable code that you want. And it basically just proxies everything. So when the system says, hey, like this is what the user's sending to your activity, it just proxies it to the actual code, which is normally going to be hidden, again, from that static analysis. And I'm going to throw it over to my buddy Jay Case for optimizers and obfuscators. He has an excellent shirt on, by the way.
So I actually intended to do all these slides for this yesterday, but instead I bought a black phone. And yeah, that took up yesterday. Optimizers and obfuscators. ProGuard is pretty much what I want to talk about first. It's like the de facto standard for Android. After I did a little write-up on breaking their licensing system, Google packed it in their SDK, so most Android apps use it. It's about 8 years older than Android. It was created by Eric Laforte, something like that. It's especially designed for Java, recommended by Google. It optimizes code, it shrinks code, it barely obfuscates code. Cool part is it's free. It actually will reduce the size of apps, so you get more apps on your phone. It does a pretty good job of making things faster, and it actually removes a lot of your garbage code, so if you write bad code, it kind of looks better when you reverse it. It removes unnecessary and unused code. It will merge identical code blocks, peephole optimizations, removes the debug information that makes it a lot easier to understand what you're reversing. It can rename objects, which is mildly annoying, and restructures code. On the slide here on the left-hand side is an application that has not been protected with an obfuscator at all. It's actually an Android exploit I wrote, but you can see it uses a PayPal SDK, which has been obfuscated. On the right-hand side is the same APK, same exploit. It's been ran through with ProGuard. The primary differences here is classes are renamed when possible. So instead of having a class that says, hey, this is the utilities class, you have E. This is ProGuard removing some of the debug information, like the source name and source file. Typically, with a compiled class, this source field will tell you the name of the file originally came from. A lot of obfuscators will either completely remove this or insert false data. The false data ones can be pretty annoying, but otherwise, again, pretty simple. Another thing that ProGuard and most obfuscators will do will be remove the line numbers, so your stack traces will be rather confusing. It reduces the size of the decks a little bit, but not too big of a deal. ProGuard stays pretty easy. Here's an example of a method that will execute shell commands. Left-hand side, we have the original source, and the right-hand side, we have the decompiled ProGuard protected output. As you can see, it's pretty fairly easy to understand. If you understand Java, it's not too strange at all. So ProGuard, what is it good for? Pretty much absolutely nothing besides just making the app smaller and faster. It doesn't provide any real obfuscation at all. Anybody recommending it for obfuscations is a little bit out there. I've heard over and over again app developers say, well, I'm protecting my app with this. It does nothing to stop reverse engineering. It's got a hacker factor of zero. This one I would like to talk about. This one's a pretty favorite subject of mine. DexGuard is a commercial variant of ProGuard by the same author. It's pretty standard, but it's incredibly scary looking for somebody that doesn't know better. It optimizes shrinks, and it does a pretty decent job of obfuscating and encrypting, but again, it's not going to stop anybody with any reverse engineering background at all. What does it do? It does pretty much everything ProGuard does. It adds automatic reflection. It'll take your standard API calls and access them by reflection. This can screw with automatic analysis. It can make it a headache to look at, and it makes your app quite a bit slower. It does string encryption, which again, you know, makes the app confusing. It's scary if you don't know what you're looking at, and slows the app down. It can provide asset, which is like the embedded asset files for the app or libraries of your encryption. Pretty simple, slows the app down, and really, especially in the case of libraries, it doesn't do anything because they have to be on disk decrypted. So once they're on the disk, we just pull them anyways. Class encryption, which is taking the original class file, encrypting it, put it inside the Dex. And it does some tamper detection as well, which is I'm not going to cover much because if you were looking at malware, we don't really care too much about tamper detection. Here's an example of the reflection and string encryption. The top field will have the standard API call, system.exit. And, the middle field is the same call but using reflection, so it's a little bit more confusing looking, a little bit larger, so your Dex file size increases. And the bottom one is the reflection and the string encryption, which provides no hint to actually what it's doing when it's exiting the app. Here's an example of the string encryption. The top field shows actually an Android 2.3 exploit that would cause the device to reboot from an app with like no permissions or one permission. The middle field shows how the strings with Dex guards are stored encrypted. All the strings in the whole class file are stuck in a byte array after being encrypted. And the bottom field is the exploit to reboot the system with the strings encrypted. So here's the encryption or decryption method actually. On the left hand side is the original one, and the right hand side is the deobfuscated one. Pretty simple. I guess you guys call it XOR. I'm not an encryption king, but I do know how code works. You feed the length, the character, and the position, and it'll decrypt the string out of the byte field, byte array. I'm a little nervous. I've never spoken one of these, so excuse me. The asset library encryption is pretty simple too. It's basically AES, and the key and IV are in pretty much plain text right in front of you. Extract the encrypted asset, decrypt it, write to disk or do whatever you're with it. Pretty simple, just a few seconds to undo. Class encryption is pretty much the same thing. Class encryption, he packs the original class in a zip file, encrypts it, and stores it in the main class. It uses AES. It'll store you'll have three large byte arrays. I did not have enough room for slides, plus I was hacking the black phone. So you'll have three large byte arrays and two small ones. The two small ones are the IV and the key. The first large one is going to be all the strings, which we really don't care about. The second one will be a class, and the third one will be the class. The second one's decrypted. They use reflection to run it. When they run it, it'll provide a new key and a new IV to decrypt a third one. Automatic unpackers will do this in a matter of seconds. It provides no real protection. But again, it'll scare most any average pirate away. This is actually how I was decrypting them. He will actually append a string to the head of the zip file, so after you decrypt it, you actually need to find where the zip header is, and then you can write the disk. I do have an automatic unpacker that will be on my GitHub. It's currently broken with Java 8, and again, I decided to work with the Black Phone instead of fix it. DexGuard. I actually like DexGuard. I bought it. After seeing some Russian malware with it, I emailed the author. He said, I don't want you to reverse it. I said, I've already reversed it. Here's the samples of the malware. I would like to buy it. I want to use it in my product. Okay, I bought it for some ridiculous amount of money. I ended up releasing an app with it, protected with it, and then releasing the source to it. He was kind of a little bit of a jerk and canceled my license for a few months. He thought I was helping the hacker community by releasing the source to an app that had been obfuscated with it. So I won't recommend buying it if you plan to do any of that. But if you just want to protect your average application, it's pretty good and will annoy most people. It has some downsides and some ups. It may increase the DEX file size. The string encryption, class encryption, the reflection make the DEX file bigger, slower, take up more space on your phone. Especially the reflection, the string encryption will really slow down your application if you use it too much. So if you're going to use it, you want to use it just on the important parts. Don't go obfuscating the open source library. That's ridiculous, but a lot of developers do. Again, it removes debug information, does automatic string encryption, which is pretty decent. Automatic class access or class library asset encryption. Pretty much the best and most annoying feature is the automatic reflection. It's pretty scary. Once they do the reflection and the string encryption, you can't literally just look at it and see what it's doing. It's technically moderately priced as far as obfuscators go, but it's still pretty expensive. It's easy to use. You'll reverse it by hand within a few hours, and with automatic reversing or automatic unpacking will matter of seconds. So, while the author gives it a hacker protection factor of 35, we're going to give it a 1 today. He might actually punch me if he ever sees me. So, Alatori is actually not as good as DexGuard, but I like it a lot better. I actually emailed the authors and they gave me a free license, which was really cool. If you have a .edu email and have an academic purpose, they'll kick you one. It's originally designed for just plain Java, but it works fine in Android Java. It's an optimizer, a shrinker, an obfuscator, and a watermarker. It's priced on the lower end at like $290. And again, free academic license, so if you have an .edu email address, hit them up. It doesn't do as much as, like, say, DexGuard, but it does name obfuscation by changing the classes and field names, control flow obfuscation, debug info obfuscation, and string encryption. Here's another part from one of my exploits. As you can see, I am checking to see if a file exists. If it exists, I do something. The bottom field is the same as the first field, but now with the string encryption. On the left-hand side is their standard Alatori string encryption. It's pretty simple, XOR. The bottom part of it is deobfuscated. Obviously, just run the string through it, and you get your original string. It, again, quite simple, like most obfuscators are. Free for educational use. It tends to decrease the DEX file size more than, say, DexGuard, because DexGuard inserts all the extras. It tends to also increase the app speed a bit, unless you're using heavy encryption. Just like ProGuard and DexGuard, it removes debug information, and it doesn't do too much in the way of obfuscation, but you know, the authors are pretty cool, especially given a reverse engineer a free license. So, again, easy reverse. We're going to give it a 0.5 on the hacker protection But again, I support them. They're pretty cool. Thank you for listening, Raul. This guy's far better, and he needs to hop up now.
Thank you. So I see a couple of people taking pictures too, and I know that it's a little small up there, but we will be releasing the slides too, so you guys don't need to take pictures. Feel free to keep doing it if you want though. So on to protectors. This one's really fun. You guys may have run across it if you're looking for some malware, or if you just happen to love looking at Chinese applications, because they love this thing. It's a Chinese protector that's based out of China, obviously. There's been multiple iterations of it, so maybe you don't know it by APK Protect, but you may have seen it as APK Protect Lite, PC, Advanced. There's probably like Retro in there. There was also Dexcrypt for a while, where it was just a script and he was letting people download it. It appears to be active, but it's really hard to tell who's actually using it. The site is now non-functional. There's a couple Chinese clones up there that do similar techniques, and their websites are, like I said, almost identical, so it's kind of really hard to tell who's doing what. The cost seems to be free, but also really expensive. But again, like, you can't go and order it anymore because it just goes to a PHP crash site, so maybe you guys can try to drop the source or something like that too if you want. It's very similar to a Packer. I gave that little demo where it's the sub application with the mangled code inside. But unlike the Packer, does not do mangled code, where this protector does. There's some nifty little anti-debug techniques in here that they have bugs in. And then there's the anti-decompiling, which is the mangled code, so that you can't just run it statically on that file. So essentially what this is going to look like in the top right corner, that's what it's going to look like if you're just going to try and do this statically and you don't understand what's going on. You're going to see BoxMolly does actually decompile it or does disassemble it, but you're going to see lots of things in there like, oh, I don't know where this is going and this is a really high number and it doesn't make sense to me. So they just drop it in the comments and they give you a NOP statement. On the bottom right-hand corner, we see the Dalvik stub code. So essentially, this is going to be the first line of code that the application is going to hit when it runs. So this is what they're injecting into your application. So we see that there's the Android manifest on the left. There's a package name, and this is actually a piece of malware. So if you ever see a package name that's absolute garbage like that, pretty much always going to be malware. And it sends SMS. Surprising. So basically, they've injected APK main app 111177, and that's what's going to get hit first whenever a user actually executes this or it's going to be run. So what happens is it goes over to that loader stub, and that loader stub is going to actually, as you can see, it's loading a shared library. So that means it's going to load some native code over JNI. And that's the actual part that's going to do the anti-emulation check, the anti-debugging, and actually fixes all the broken stuff in memory. I wrote some pseudocode. Hopefully you guys can read this and it's legible. Essentially what's going on here is the Dalvik actual runtime on the phone, when you install, it's going to optimize it's called an ODEX file. So it takes the Dalvik file and it optimizes it. That's where you get an ODEX from. It basically sees the bad parts and it just goes, I don't care about these. I'm just going to skip it, leave it in memory, and maybe we'll just deal with it later because it doesn't look like it's being run. Upon actual execution, the stub loads and it calls that JNI onload function right there. And if we just look through here, there's the anti-debug call. It's basically going to attach to itself and try and ptrace itself. This is an attempt to basically say, well, if I'm ptracing myself, then nobody else in theory is supposed to be able to ptrace me. That's easy to get around. But that's anti-debug number one. Then all it does is it goes and it tries to find its own ODEX file. So this is basically in case maybe a reverser has wrapped the application and changed things around. They're not going to be able to find their own ODEX. So that's an anti-analysis thread trick. So if they detect that you're doing this, they just go into an endless loop and just sit there. And that'll actually cause IDA to hang. And then so what it does next is it looks for the QMUD process. So basically, if you're running this inside an emulator, all the emulators are QMU based. So it's looking for the QMU daemon. And the code on the bottom is actually what it's doing. So we actually released a little hack that can hide your emulator. All it's doing is it basically hashes what the proc PID command line is. So it looks to see if is that system bin QMUD. And if it sees that in the first, I believe that's going to be 101 processes, it's going to crash. And it's basically just not going to let you run this on an emulator. So that's their anti-emulation technique. And then it basically will patch the ODEX inside the memory. And all it's doing is it's basically looking inside its memory to see where did the actual Dalvik runtime unpack this. It's going to grab it. It's going to do an mprotect so that it can write it. It's going to fix that code in memory. And then it's going to re-protect that memory. So all we do basically to attack it is, and here's a little, this is what you would see in static analysis. And this is what you would see after running it. So the easiest way to do this is just forget static analysis for the time and let them do the hard work. All we need to do is basically let them decrypt it in memory, and then we just attach to not the original process, but a cloned process, and we can just dump all the memory, and it's all easy right there. You know, you're going to avoid all the QMU stuff with an LD preload hack. We have that on our GitHub. The clone processes, everyone seems to forget about those, so you know, there's one process that's protected, and then there's maybe 20 that aren't, so let's just choose one of the 20 that are not. There is some more actual encryption in the DEX file. This appears to be an option, so most people only have the mangled code that gets unpacked into the memory, but there is it looks like DEXcrypt style. It's basically a modified Base64 encryption, and I believe it's using DES, though, as opposed to AES. And it looks like this guy just threw this stuff together and it encrypts some strings so that if you were to just dump that from memory, you still need to do a little bit more reversing. It's not going to be just a normal, like the virgin code that was used before being packed. So this one's actually really fun. It's really awesome. It's a really great example of someone trying to think outside the box. They really haven't iterated much. There haven't been many changes in the product, at least in applications I've seen in the wild. There are tons of people using this. If you want to take a stab at looking at your first protector, this is a great one. Since it's really easy, this loader stub is super easy to follow. They really didn't obfuscate the native binaries much, so you're not going to have to go through any hoops of like rebuilding import tables or any of that stuff. There's logging statements that they left in, so you're going to be able to actually go through here and see some stuff. So it's really great for beginners to try and get their heads wrapped around. So the interesting part about protectors and packers is I say they're hard once, because once you figure out what they're doing, you can ignore them for the rest of your life. So you never have to look at this guy after you've done it once and just unpack it out of memory and you're good. Where obfuscators tend to do, their encryptions get munged a bit, they start changing. Each developer has like a little bit different of a build, so they all end up looking a little bit differently, where this is pretty much going to be cookie cutter for every single application that you find. I gave it a hacker protection of 3 because there's, I guess, technically no public documentation on how to unpack this until today, I guess. So that's good. Maybe it goes down to like 1 now, I'm not sure. But it's fun to look at and it does a pretty good job. And it actually works pretty well for like commercial products, apparently. So moving on to packers, I love beating up on this one. The guy's a nice guy, and he left a couple functions in there for me. He actually has a function that says hi, Tim, because I always reverse it and then tweet about it and give him crap about it. But it's really easy to hack this hose dextajar. Excellent. We need this.
That's what I like to hear.
Take a little break, I guess.
I disagree that I need this, but I am quite hungover from the fun yesterday.
Oh, this will help.
Everybody loves Jack.
Yeah. You can keep going.
Oh, okay. So basically, this was used as a proof of concept. I believe he's a security.
Stop.
Okay, there we go. Thank you.
You know, out of all the rooms, this one has always been the best at showing the love. So.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
One second.
You can just leave the bottle. That's cool.
Nice try. Yeah, I thought about that for a second.
Oh. Okay, you guys aren't nice, but all right, thanks. So this guy was a security consultant, and I believe he was just kind of doing this as a pitch to basically say, hey, look, I broke all these decompilers, and you should maybe hire me or something. I'm not sure, because it really was not pushed as a good commercial tool, and it really doesn't work that well. It's a great proof of concept, though. It actually uses the exact same Dexception attack that I outlined in the Dex Education 101. Cost was free, but it appears to be offline now. They took down the site. Just as an outline of how this would work, basically you were writing your code, you get your normal stuff, you're going to package up your APK, you go to their cloud service, and then their cloud service just bundles it and tosses it back to you. You'd need to re-sign it. This is just having that stub application. The only little trick that this one was doing is it's actually stuffing it inside the Dex header, and that's the actual thing that I demoed at Black Hat. So if we go over, detecting this was really, really easy. This is a O1O editor with a colorized Dex template. Go download it. This is like my favorite tool in the world for forensic stuff on Dex. But it makes it really easy. You see red sections and it says, wow, like something's wrong here. And clearly something looks like it's encrypted right after that header file. Because this, if you've ever looked at a Dex file, it just doesn't look normal. And the red should highlight that. You can also see that the header size, which is normally, I believe, 70 hex bytes, is huge. So clearly something's been injected in there. So this is really easy to see. And then basically all this is going to do is static analysis is going to not really work because you're going to see this encrypted file. So you're going to just run your tool against it. It ignores that encrypted file there. It throws it away. And then you see basically this loader stub. So you're going to see like two classes left in there. So what happens in memory is you're going to go into the optimized Dex file. It has that encrypted file. The really interesting and secure, with quotes, secure thing that this guy does is he decrypts it in memory and then just drops it onto the file system unencrypted. So yeah, you can just grab it after it runs if you want, and that's your unpacker. Kind of as a joke, because this whole thing was supposed to hose Dex to jar, we wrote a tool where we used Dex to jar on the loader stub, and then we wrote Java around it to just use his own code to decrypt his code. So it was just kind of like a nice little jab back at him, and I haven't seen the next iteration of this tool, but it's always good when, you know, throw things back and forth at each other. So again, that was a really interesting one. It's a simple, really, really simple. So if you've never written a packer, you really still don't understand what a packer is, you can go check this one out. It's really easy to reverse. It's really easy to understand. And it's been documented a few times on Twitter by us and a couple other people who wanted to troll him a little bit more. So it's really easy to automate and unpack. And I've only seen it once in the wild. And it looked like someone was just testing, wrapping a piece of malware, and then uploading it to VirusTotal. And everyone detected it anyway, so nobody cared. So moving on, we see Pangzi, which is a Chinese packer. This one is actually kind of interesting. It has some pretty fatal flaws in it, and it doesn't appear to be active anymore. There are quite a few samples in the wild, but they don't seem to be actually using it anymore. So either the author just got bored, or maybe someone stole his code or something. It does follow a lot of patterns we see in Chinese packers. But again, this one just doesn't appear to be used anymore. So it does have anti-debug, anti-tamper. It looks like it's got some other functionality in there that they just forgot to turn on. And again, maybe they just stopped development of this. So it's kind of interesting, though. The cost, I'm really not sure. I can't find a website for this. My Chinese is really not that great. So if you guys see one, I mean, let me know. Maybe nobody else can find the website, and that's why nobody's using it. And this just follows the normal part where they're just basically giving you a stub application that has the encrypted Dex file. I'm not sure if you were uploading it to a cloud service, because again, I can't find their actual site for any of this stuff. Basically, how this one was working is relatively simple. On the first execution, it's basically going to go into, it's going to say, hey, is this my first time? Okay, let's go to the JNI. So it goes into JNI and it verifies the integrity of the encrypted package. So when you're reversing it, you might get all scared. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, it's using AES and has encryption. But don't worry, it's not actually doing anything with that. It's just checking a hash. Then it goes into the actual decryption of the Dex file, which is relatively rudimentary. It's pretty simple. And on the next slide, we'll see exactly why. But after it's done this once, it just keeps this in memory. And or no, excuse me, it's a, this one actually also drops it onto the file system, so you can always just grab it there. And on the second execution, it's already unpacked it, it's on the disk, it's just gonna load it directly, and it just proxies everything over using the Dex class loader, which if you're familiar with Java, same thing as the Java class loader. So AES, again, is used, but it's only for the digest. And here is that basic stub decryption. And as you can see, there's only one byte for a key, and then there's some magic XORing going on, and that's your fancy decryption. Just XOR everything. So it's pretty easy to write a static unpacker for this one, and you don't actually ever have to run it on a device. But you know, if you were to run on a device, you can also see that they're basically dumping it out to data, package name, appdex, and that's going to have the folder with the encrypted copy pulled from memory, and then also the decrypted copy as well. So you can always just grab that. And here's just an example of seeing that run. You're going to see it. You get the appdex, and you have the classes.jar and the dex file. So no work really needed, I guess. So this one's an interesting guy. It's going to slightly increase because you're going to use the stub, and then it's just encrypting. It does work on almost all versions. I guess it stopped working. I was testing it on 4.4, and it appears to crash. So again, it doesn't appear to be actively maintained, so that's probably never going to go back. An interesting thing with this is since it's such a simple packer, you could likely just take it and then hack your own things in there. You don't actually need their tool. Since you know what they're doing for encryption and decryption, you could actually change up the keys just by patching it, change that XOR key. You could then push in your own encrypted payload if you wanted. And without actually having their source code, you could start making your own knockoff PangZ packer. And that'd be actually a fun project to do. I gave this one 1.5 because it was interesting. I wish they didn't just dump it onto the file system because that's kind of boring, but it was a little bit more difficult than hosed Dexajar, so we'll give them that. So this is the big guy that a lot of people talk about online. A lot of people want to say, they post it everywhere, like, we've unpacked this, that's awesome, now go away and we're never going to tell you how to do it. That's why this was actually one of the inspirations for the talk. Another part of that inspiration was they have a cloud service, and they're very adamant about saying, we never let any bad people use our packer. So we're never going to pack anything bad. No malware will ever come through here, and we already do our manual app approval. So that's great, but we found plenty of malware using this. So I mean, you know, they're doing a good job. There's not tons, but there's definitely malware getting through. And as we gave an example before about, you can basically, once you understand these, you can inject your own application in there. I'm not saying I've seen people do that, but it could easily be done by some of these guys if they wanted to. So you can basically skip their actual cloud service check if you wanted to. And this is actually an interesting nuance of just where we are today in the industry, where you know, people used to just download UPX and you can just pack anything you want, where now people are attempting to say, okay, give it to me, I'm going to check it out, and then I'll send it back to you. And so they're just using that cloud service to try and be a gateway and not let bad people use it. But as we've seen, bad people are using it. The cost on this one is pretty phenomenal. I've heard higher estimates than this, but I personally saw some numbers that were around $10,000 for this packer. So that's pretty beefy. It stopped working on 4.4, but for $10,000, I'm assuming they're going to try and release an update sometime soon. This one has anti-debugging, anti-tamper, anti-decompilation, anti-runtime injection. So this one's really fun. It's a lot harder than the others. They basically hook every single memory object that they use. They use DLOpen to reopen everything, and then they basically rebuild their own import table because they've encrypted all their function names. So it's really fun to go through. I don't have enough time to go through every single step, but basically what you're going to be looking at is on the first execution in Dalvik that hits the loader stub, that goes into a JNI anti-debug launch. So basically this is what's checking to see, okay, am I being debugged? No? All right, I'm going to start forking into two more processes, and then it basically p-traces those other two processes. So these are three processes that are going to be running, and they're basically going to be talking to each other over p-trace. So you're not going to be able to block their calls to that. You're not really going to be able to read their data, and it gets kind of annoying because they basically pass information back and forth the entire time. One of those forked applications is actually what ends up decrypting the DEX in memory. So we're just going to let them do all that awesome work and then just grab it out of the memory because we don't really care what they're doing. So this is the example. As you launch this piece of malware, you would then see three processes start up. And normally you would say, I'm just going to attach to the first one. But you can't because they're all talking to each other and they're all attached to each other, which is a nice little anti-debug trick. Though again, all those cloned processes at the bottom, that's basically just looking at that original process and saying, what are your tasks? Tasks are clone processes, and this is just like Linux. So what we're going to be able to do is just say, all right, well, the top three are attached to each other, but none of the bottom ones are. So we'll just attach to one of those. And then basically, if you were to do a couple core dumps with GDB, you'd be looking for an optimized DEX file in the memory and to save you a lot of time. Basically, we see the encrypted stuff in memory. So we see the .cache, and the classes.jar, classes.dex. Those are still encrypted. But right below, every single time, is where they decrypt it. So there's no real indication there. But essentially, the tool that we wrote will just go through and it starts sniffing the memory. It says, oh, is this APK protect? Or is this guy going to be Bangle? If it sees Bangle, it's just going to go into the memory. And then it's going to grab it out. And since you control this device, it is an odexed file. You'll be able to deodex it with BoxMolly. The instructions are all on BoxMolly's website. If it sounds like I'm speaking Swedish, because I think it's Swedish, right? I think BoxMolly's Swedish.
Norwegian.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Icelandic. There we go. Thanks, Rob. So yeah, basically, if I'm speaking a different language, this is all documented online. And in the tool that we're going to release, there's a GDB script that basically does this. It's really slow because it's a bash script. And we rewrote it in C. And it's lots and lots of comments. This is DEF CON 101, so hopefully you guys can then create some unpackers. So I really like Bangle. It's awesome. This is probably going to be the most advanced one you see out there. There are a couple more packers that are emerging. They're not really used. You're going to see Tencent and Ijami. Lots of Chinese ones seem to be knocking each other off using the same strings. It looks like either someone compromised someone's code or someone just sold it to everyone at wholesale. But this one is really fun, and they seem to actively develop it with that huge price tag. They're going to keep developing it, and hopefully once they see this talk, they'll just maybe move that around in memory or do some more tricks, and we'll get to chase them again. But they did a really good job. There's no actual tool you can download. Again, you got to use that cloud service. I'm giving a hacker protection factor of 5. This is probably the best tool out there, though I'm not suggesting people use this for other applications because you're going to have that lag time of anytime you need to update, you're going to have to send it to them. They go through an approval process. I just wouldn't really recommend using any of these tools other than probably DexGuard or maybe Alatori is what he was recommending. So now what? Just a quick bit on this. We do have an initialized Git repo up there. I'm going to push this probably once I get to the airport and on a more secure network, maybe. But all the code's ready, so you'll be able to unpack Bangle, APK Protect. These things are really easy, and we just want to make it more accessible for people. So, you know, there's going to be the samples of the malware that use all these protectors. I'm going to shoot them over to Mila at Contagio Dump. And so you're going to be able to practice this kind of stuff. We're going to upload the resource notes of when we're reversing this stuff. And again, that unpacker code, I put a lot of comments in there that I normally wouldn't be putting in there. And it's just explaining what's the thought process, why are we doing it this way. It's kind of hacky code, but it should get you the picture there. And so now moving on to the Black Phone, why you're all here.
So let's explain why I'm incredibly hungover right now. Yesterday, I got paid for doing some training. They had Black Phones for sale, so we bought it. And I like rooting phones. We used 3 stages of exploits. I'm going to talk a little fast. We're running out of time. The exploit does require user interaction if you're writing about it. User interaction, not remotely exploitable. User interaction required. One of the first things they did that I ran into is they disabled ADB debugging, which means you can't get a shell or debug apps on it. They turned it off basically by just removing the button that lets you open the developer menu. This took about 30 seconds to figure out a way around it. We just fire off an intent and open the menu through ourselves. So build an app, upload it to your server, download it, install app, run app, bypass their little trick. They claim it was because ADB crashes the phone. I can't get it to crash the phone. Works fine for me.
Encrypt your phone and then try to run it. It'll be very unhappy. That's why I turned off.
Okay. Thank you. The second one is getting escalation beyond system. They seem to have left a highly privileged application debuggable. We can't use run as, but we can attach to it with a debugger and execute whatever we want as the system user. System user, pretty privileged. Your attack surface is huge once you have it. If you have a system user, you're going to get root on your phone. Jay Freeman actually wrote out how to do this. So once we found this application, this is what took the 5 minutes. We just followed his instructions and we had a system user. Really simple, basic CTS, Google's compatibility test suite should have caught this. This is a huge hint that they didn't even bother to run basic tests on this device, which is scary. Google would never approve this device if they had Google apps on it. The third stage, there's so many different system to root exploits and vulnerabilities out there. I'm not going to actually disclose this one, but if you know how to do the first two things, you'll already know how to do this too. So we all use one here, but we're not going to disclose it just because I want to keep it, and there are plenty of them out there. Stage one, build the app with the code in the earlier slide. Stage, enable ADB. Stage two, it's not playing. Stage two, get the system UID, user ID, execution, and stage three, root, and it's not playing the video. Awesome, is it?
Oh, okay, cool.
We can't see it, so. Yeah, you can see me not being able to enable USB debugging, which is annoying. Then you can see me getting around that with my little tiny hack of an app. And now you can see a root shell. I actually ran the other exploits without videoing because they go over the computer. Again, not remotely doable, user intention. If indeed they remove this because it crashes the phone, then the product shouldn't have shipped. But total time to think of this was about 5 minutes. Actual implementation was a little bit longer because, well, we were laughing. I will have more detailed instructions when I get home, and the app source will be up on GitHub as well. So hopefully they get it all fixed. Credit to them, the second vulnerability that we found was actually fixed in update. I wasn't aware of this, and the phone they sold me did not have the update. So the second one's actually fixed. If you want to root the phone, do it before you update.
I think we're out of time, but you guys can come up here if you have any questions. And thank you for coming.